David Eicholt, Sean Balk, HawkeyeInsider.com. Swarmcast is back and better than ever. Football season is around the corner. We have a lot to discuss. I mean, you talk about a fully loaded, normalized media day, Sean, that we didn't get last year. The scrimmage, which was surprising, and I think some, in a lot of ways, compared to what we've seen in previous years, in the latest about Iowa recruiting, as well as Hawkeyes in the NBA, which is a phrase that we haven't uttered for quite a while, but things are locked down. But Sean, you're back in Iowa City after a nice summer and the home stretch for you, man. It's college is almost coming to a close for you.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy to think about. I mean, I know there's the cliche that, you know, 4 years goes fast. In my case, 4.5 years, but yeah, it went crazy fast. And especially when you take into account all the COVID stuff that happened, my senior year kind of getting gypped out, especially in the fall, and you know, the end of my junior year, that kind of put a damper on everything. But yeah, one more semester, and you know, hopefully we'll have some good news coming up in the next couple weeks regarding that. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens this fall and, you know, kind of taking everything to the next level.
Yeah, no, definitely, man. It, man, it's kind of wild that it, you know, you talk about 4 years fly by, Sean. I mean, this is my fourth football season now covering Iowa, and it seems wild because it literally feels like I got here last year. I mean, it really feels like I'm still so new to the market and I'm new to doing all this. And, you know, it's been a good ride, and I'm happy to see where we are. And it's crazy, but football season is rolling back around. We got fans in Kinnick Stadium from all accounts and everything sounding like, I believe there's about 5,000 tickets left as I believe we got that update for on Friday. There's 5,000 tickets left for Iowa, Indiana. I mean, I bet it's going to sell out, but that's for people who are still wanting tickets. Remember, tickets are also mobile only. There's not going to be any paper tickets this year, so be sure to take that into account as well. But Sean,
What happens if they don't sell out? Do they still consider it a sellout?
I mean, this isn't Nebraska, so I'm not quite sure about that one. But you know, we have a lot to get to, Sean. I mean, you talk about a fully loaded media day, and I gotta give University of Iowa props for the way they handled it, just because we got everybody that we wanted to available. And, you know, obviously with name, image, and likeness, things were bound to change as far as who can talk. I thought it was a good move by Kurt Ferentz to let the true freshman talk for the first time in, I think, 13, 14 years or so since Julian Vandervelde was on campus. And I think, you know, DJK, I don't think, was allowed to talk back in 2011. But it's good to have that opportunity again. But, Sean, I guess let's just dive into some of the top storylines that people want to talk about, and we can just spout off from there. But defensive line, I think that's the number one concern outside of Spencer Petras, just because he's obviously, I think, the X factor to how far this team can go. But you've written a couple stories on defensive line. Let's just go back and forth on it. What were your takeaways from media day? And then we can transition into kind of what happened in the scrimmage.
Yeah, I think the cliche that we've seen, using the word cliche way too much already today, but I think the thing that we've heard, I mean, we heard it at Big Ten Media Day too, with Zach Van Valkenburgh. He mentioned that, you know, a lot from the outside, there's not really much confidence in this group. And I think from the inside, it's a completely different feel. Now, I thought it was interesting. Kirk mentioned on Saturday after the Kids Day practice, where someone asked him about how he would assess the defensive line, and Kirk just straight up said, "We're young." And I think maybe that's sort of his way of saying, like, we got inexperience on the inside, or, you know, on the edge outside of Van Valkenburgh. I mean, John Wagoner brings experience, Joe Evans brings experience, but they're not guys like, you know, Chauncey Golston. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have Zach Van Valkenburgh there, but, you know, they really need him to take on that next step this year. And, you know, especially on the interior too, I'm really fascinated to see how that goes. We saw with Black and not Noah Shannon the other day, but Logan Lee stepped in there. There were a number of defensive tackles that were out, so we didn't really get a great feel for all that. We saw Lucas Van Ness in there a little bit. They put Deontay Craig in there as well, kind of mix and matched a little bit. I know the staff is really high on Black, as we've talked about all spring, but
yeah,
I mean, I definitely think there's reason to be a little bit concerned about the defensive line. Now, you know, it's going to come up. Like, it's Iowa. Like, they always find a way to put these guys back and, you know, raise the standard of the of what people expected from the beginning. But I think this year's a little different because you have a team like Indiana who is so talented in the season opener. You're not facing an FCS squad in the season opener this year.
Yeah.
You know, you got Iowa State who is going in, who has a lot of hype around that program, going into maybe, you know, potentially their best year as a program ever. And those are your first two games right off the bat. And make sure you remember this too, that Kent State is, you know, they're a MAC team, but they're going to be the favorite. They're probably the favorites in the MAC with the offense that they have. That's week three, correct? I don't know the schedule.
I believe that's week three. But, yeah, like you mentioned, I think they had one of the more explosive offenses in the country last year. And I mean, totally different caliber of competition, but some of the stats are pretty eye-popping, to say the least. I believe Kent State's week three. I think Colorado State's week four.
That sounds right.
Like you said, I don't have the schedule in front of me. But, you know, like you mentioned, it was interesting, too, listening to Kirk after the practice, Sean, that it's been already a very weird year for Iowa injuries. I mean, you think about where else in the country, maybe besides Nebraska, does an offensive lineman get hurt by jumping off a hay, like get hurt while baling hay and jumping off the haystack and breaking. I think he broke a bone in his foot. Kyler Schott's going to miss the early part of the season. Kirk does expect him to be back for the early portion of the schedule, I think is the way he phrased it. But then you look at YA Black, who did play, by the way, he is back at practice, but I think he got off to a slow start in fall camp, Sean, because what Kirk say? He slipped getting out of the shower and had some really weird injury. I mean,
yeah,
it's just a very weird year. But like you mentioned, I think Noah Shannon wasn't able to play. Louis Steck wasn't able to play. But, you know, like you said, I think young is the best way to describe it. I think it's very potential filled, but I think Joe Evans was the second most experienced defensive lineman coming back. And I think he only played 187 snaps last year. Like, that shows the inexperience of this line. And like you said, when you go up against Indiana and Iowa State's going to be no joke, Breece Hall, and they got I think everybody back among that offensive line, Iowa's going to have to create some pressure, or I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on the shoulders of Jack Campbell, of Justin Jacobs, and of Seth Benson to really get those stops and to go blitz and put some pressure on the quarterback and try to stop Breece Hall in the backfield during week two. But I saw some good things. I thought Joe Evans had a few really good plays, who, you know, got off the edge and stand up rush. I think Van Valkenburg showed he's easily the best edge rusher of the pack right now, but the pass rushing is where he needs to take a step forward. So I think it'll be interesting to watch, but let's flip over to the offensive line, Sean, because I think we could talk 10 minutes about each unit, just about what we saw. But the offensive line was interesting. Linderbaum was dominant as per usual. But Mason Richmond was running had quite a few reps with the ones. And I think you mentioned this on our board to our VIP member, Sean, but I think it is an open competition right now to who really does lock down that second tackle spot. And from what I saw on Saturday, I think Nick DeJong probably has one of the tackle spots locked down, you know, barring, I think, any setback or barring just not playing well in the final half of camp.
Yeah, and I think when Kirk mentioned Mason Richmond, I think Scott Docterman asked him about that left tackle position, and Kirk said, you know, I don't even want to guess who's going to start at that position or at any position, really, you know, besides running back, quarterback, it seems, and you know, secondary and linebackers.
And Linderbaum.
And Linderbaum. And even, like, on the interior, I think Cody Ince has that guard spot locked down. I think Justin Britt, while Kirk didn't want to admit it, I think he's the guy. He had his moments on Saturday. I thought there were a couple times that he got beat on the interior. I know Deontay Craig beat him when Craig lined up a tackle. And who else was there? And then you have Mason Richmond on the outside at left tackle, and I think Nick DeJong has that. I'm just botching names today. I think he has that right tackle spot locked up. I also thought it was interesting that Kirk said on Saturday as well that they like to keep Connor Colby, true freshman at that one spot at right tackle right now. But George Barnett mentioned on Friday that they could put him inside as well. But I think the thought is that he'll stay at that tackle spot. But yeah, I definitely think there's an open competition at the left tackle spot based on what Kirk said. I mean, I think, you know, it's good. I've mentioned this before. I think it's good that there's competition, but I think the staff would really like to see one guy in particular step up and take on that role. I thought in the summer that Plum would be the guy to do that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that he won't do that. I think it's more based on him starting those last two games of the season last year. And now you see Richmond. I mean, Mason got snaps last year, I believe, at guard. And he's a guy that could play both spots as well. And I think he's – in the long term, I think he's more of a tackle. And I think the staff kind of sees that as well. But – yeah, I just think when you talk about the offensive line right now, you're looking at right tackle, you have Nick DeJong. At right guard, that would be Britt. Center, Linderbaum. Left guard, Ince. And then left tackle, I think it's kind of up in the air at this point. But I think those four other spots are locked in as of now.
Yeah, you know, and obviously Keller Shaw will get the spot back after once he comes back from his injury. But right now, if I had to guess, I don't think he'll be back till at least week three, because based on trying to read in between the lines, which is what we do in media day, Sean, I think Shaw kind of gave off the vibe that he wasn't going to be ready for Iowa State. But I mean, of course, things could change. But by the way he kind of phrased it and the way he kind of talked about it, I didn't see him use that confident. I think Britt has the advantage right now, because if he's 100% healthy, which I believe he is, Kirk has been raving about Justin Britt basically ever since he got on campus. I remember he talked about how he has more knowledge than a lot of his third year guys. I think he's a really dominant player, but I also think that it's still a little bit of an open competition. I do think Britt is going to get the start. Tyler Ellsbury might be in that backup role. I would think he's the next guy up. Wouldn't you say, Sean? I would say Ellsbury is probably that guy.
Yeah, I would say he's there. I think Josh Folk, I don't want to say he's next up, but I think he's in the mix eventually. I think he's a year away from being, you know, right in that mix. They would love to have Shot back, but I think Britt, you know, there's a chance that maybe he takes the job, and if he does well in those first 2 weeks, like, does it turn into a Jack Kerner situation where – you know, he steps up for a guy injured and takes on the starting role. I mean, maybe we see something like that. I know Shot is really valuable to this offensive line, just as like a model of consistency and leadership, especially for a group that, you know, outside of Tyler Linderbaum and, you know, technically Cody Ince is relatively young. So that's going to be really fascinating to watch over the next couple of or the first couple of weeks of the season to see how that offensive line, you know, goes, because I think there's, outside of Linderbaum, I think there's a chance that we could see more rotations too, because, you know, Nick DeJong, I feel like he has that right tackle spot locked in, but I think there's potentially a chance where you could see some rotation. That's where kind of, you know, maybe I'm looking into it too much, but that's where I kind of got a hunch when I was talking to George Barnett. He kind of feels that, you know, if you're the second guy, it's only a matter of time till you're the first team guy if all goes to plan, and you never know. You're always one snap away.
Yeah.
That's something to think about too. If you have a guy that is in that second spot, I think the staff, you know, feels comfortable about the centers or, you know, the starting offensive line at those four spots, but they also feel comfortable putting in those second string spots guys too, you know, being that one snap away. So you never really know. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens. I think with an Iowa offensive line, I mean, you saw it a couple of years ago where it struggled. I think this group has potential to be really good, but, you know, there is still some question marks with how things are going to shape up come week one.
You know, something I think that we haven't really mentioned about the offensive line, Sean, what about just how much they grew from spring to fall camp? I mean, in the spring scrimmages, Sean, I thought they were – it was bad. I mean, but to be fair, and I did write this, the offensive line is usually going to be the worst position group in spring ball. Yeah. But the amount of growth that I think they've shown, it was pretty crazy to think. Before we keep going, I don't really want to keep going position by position, but let's go this route, Sean. I have my easy answer for this. So I'll answer first and I'll give you a minute to think about it. the biggest surprise from the scrimmage on Saturday, for me, hands down, it was not, I mean, you could probably say that how the offense outplayed the defense, we'll get to that. But I just thought how good the running backs were as a whole. I mean, Iowa's running backs, they were Tyler Goodson was Tyler Goodson. Gavin Williams looks like he's going to be that consistent 5 to 6 yard caliber guy that has potential to break through. I think he showed some nice patience and vision and a little bit quicker feet than I think we've seen from him. But I also, man, Ivory Kelly Martin looked as healthy as he has in the last 3 years. I mean, he was fast. He was quick. He caught the ball out in space a couple of times. He was doing some good stuff. And I didn't want to say I counted him out of the running back rotation, but I thought Gavin Williams would just, yeah, as far as skill set wise, I think he complements Tyler better. But Ivory, I thought, showed some really nice things. And then LaShawn Williams, he might be in contention to play this year because what we saw out of him, you talk about the just, he had a 60-yard run. I think he was stopped within the 10-yard line, maybe the 5-yard line. He had a 47-yard touchdown run on top of that. He was breaking tackles. He was patient. And I think as a whole, Sean, Iowa's running backs were following the blockers at a very high level. For how young that room is, that can be one of the more difficult things to teach. I thought Williams did a great job. He broke a lot of tackles. I mean, these weren't just giant holes. I think the offensive line did a nice job. But it was a very good combination of both, I think, complementing each other. And I'll even go down the line and say Devin Hilson, the true freshman running back. Obviously, he's going to redshirt this year, and now he's not going to play barring injuries. But for a guy that hasn't played much running back, from the limited reps he had, I thought he looked pretty good on that first run. I think it was the outside run, broke 2 or 3 tackles, stiff-armed a guy, got probably a solid 13 yards. When a guy doesn't play running back, you really don't expect to see that early, and especially only a couple practices in. So, by the way, the top 4 running backs scored at least 1 touchdown against a defense that typically doesn't allow many rushing touchdowns throughout the year. They're always in, I think, the top 3 or top 5 for fewest rushing touchdowns allowed. But man, Lodell Betts has got to be feeling really good about that running back depth. I mean, that was one of my biggest question marks about this team, but at least on Saturday, they produced at a high level and they took care of the football.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
Yeah, while it was only one practice, too, I think getting the – just hearing what Kirk and, you know, the other coaches mentioned, I think it's pretty clear that Goodson and Kelly Martin are the top two. But I mentioned it, I think, in one of my things that I wrote in the last couple of days, that I think the Williams are going to battle it out for that number 3 spot throughout the whole season. I think those two would be really good complementary backs for each other once – Kelly Martin and Goodson are gone. Who knows when that will be. They have at least 2 more or this year and another year with each other. But I think those two would be really good complementary backs to each other. But right now it's like, you know, you don't want to talk about injuries, but I think you have to solidify a third back. And while, you know, it's a situational thing, I think it all depends on what situation you're in and, you know, how the defense is playing you, how the defensive line is getting through the gaps, how the offensive line's blocking. It kind of relies on that a little bit. You know, if you're playing on grass or turf, like let's talk about last year, Tyler Goodson, Penn State game, couldn't really do much on the turf or on the grass, but Sargent was able to do what he could do on that grass better than Goodson could. And that was the difference in that game. I think so. I know it was a blowout, but that I felt like was really helping the chains move offensively. And I was really impressed with Kelly Martin, too. I know he talked about on Friday that he really felt he was moving well, better than he expected, and Betts said the same. So that was really encouraging to see. And I think I've heard this, too, that, you know, I think Kelly Martin's a really good complimentary back to Goodson, but I think he's more on the elusive side than Sargent was. You know, yeah. I think he's closer to Goodson in that regard. And I know there's, you know, kind of been a couple – question marks here and there, but I think when you're talking big playmaking ability, I think he's on the level, not on the level of Goodson, but I think he's closer to the level of Goodson than Sargent is in that regard. And you know, that's a good thing, but also like Mekhi Sargent, like that guy, You know, he kept his leg moving. He would not stop. And I think that's going to be something that, as a number two back, I think I want to see Kelly Martin do more of that this year than maybe he's had in years past. I know he can get to that second level. I know he can break out and make a big play, as we saw his true freshman year against Nebraska. But, you know, can he fight for those extra yards like Sargent can? I think he's going to be a really good guy in the passing game too, you know, whether it be for screens or wheel routes or, you know, all the above. It's going to be really fascinating to see how he's used when he's on the field. I think Goodson probably gets 85%, maybe 80% of the carries this year, but Kelly Martin probably falls into that 15-20%, and who knows, maybe, you know, we get 5% from one of the Williams in barring a situation. But, you know, I think on, like, kind of just to sum it up, I think Kelly Martin's going to be a formidable number two back, but how can he be like a Mekhi Sargent? Because those are hard to come by.
And yeah, you talk about Mekhi Sargent. Remember, he tied with Goodson for touchdowns last year at 7. And I think if you talk about a guy that doesn't stop moving his feet, doesn't stop, you know, moving his legs, I think Gavin Williams fits that mold. I think he's already got that part nailed down, which is why I think he can be that consistent 5 to 6 yard carry caliber guy. But I think Iowa fans should be feeling pretty good about the running backs. But now let's talk about probably one of the more important storylines heading into this season, Sean, the quarterback. I think Spencer showed some good growth on Saturday. And if there was any question still about who's going to be a starting quarterback, I know it's only one practice we got to see, Sean, but it was answered on Saturday. It was. I mean, Spencer Petras was far and away the best quarterback on the field. Completed about 65-67% of his passes, which is what you want to see out of him this year. I think that 65% threshold is going to be the key to Iowa's season. If he can make that sort of jump, I think Nate Stanley always said he wanted to get around 65%. The receiver, and I think that Petras, I thought he overthrew a couple passes. He started off very slow, but I thought he threw a great ball to Arlen Bruce, true freshman wide receiver, down the field. I think on his third or fourth pass attempt, Sean, that was a great, great throw just out of the reach of Riley Moss. And Arlen made an outstanding play on that too, the way he played that and the way he was able to come down with that. I thought he made some good passes over the middle. He went through his options. He was making – there was only a couple questionable – decisions as far as where he threw the football. But I think when you look at Alex Padilla and Deuce Hogan, I thought Padilla did a really good job in that second half of that scrimmage. I think he really bounced back, because that first half was as poor of football as I've seen Padilla play in the times that we've been able to watch him. But him and Hogan, I think at times both just forced, you know, the ball in these windows that just weren't there and they weren't going to fit. There was a couple interceptions. We'll talk about the secondary here in a minute. Terry Roberts was outstanding. And I think, you know, I know you wrote something on him today for our VIP members. I think Spencer's far and away the quarterback number one. I think he commanded the field better. And I think a very important thing that's been, again, not overlooked, but maybe not discussed as much. One of the biggest things I took away from Friday's media day, Sean, was he missed over 30 days of summer workouts last year because of two or three separate contact tracing due to COVID-19. He never got the virus, and you combine that with missing spring. That's a lot of lost development time. And you talk about how important the timing is and chemistry is between the receiver and quarterback. That's when you really get that chemistry down. You can run all the routes in the world that you want at high school fields or whatever, but it's impossible to simulate in-game reps. It's impossible to simulate a normal fall camp. I mean, that's what all this is for, and spring. So now I think that Spencer's had a full spring, a full summer. I think we saw the timing was much better, and we saw that on display on Saturday. So he's got to come out sharp, obviously, in the first 2 weeks. But I for the most part, I think you could definitely see how much Petras has grown as opposed to where he was at last year.
Yeah, and I thought that point that Kirk made on Friday was really interesting too, with how long he was in quarantine. Did he mention that last year? I honestly can't remember.
No, and I don't think so. They mentioned the spring, and I think they said it was an unusual summer. And I think it's also worth noting, Sean, I think you got to give props to Spencer. because he took a lot of criticism, from fans, media. But the way he got in front of, I think, the media every single week, and he never referred to missing that many days of summer development, I think that shows the caliber of leader that he is. And I think you got to give him props for that.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, talking about the spring or talking about the scrimmage the other day, the practice, you know, I don't think Iowa's going to try and be too complicated or, you know, kind of show what's in, more in the bag during those practices, because they know they got people like us recording it and, you know, overreacting to every snap, everything, every block, every pass, every throw. So, and, you know, teams are going to want that advantage and, you know, kind of pick, kind of take anything they can get to get some early season scouting. So they're not going to try and make things too complicated or kind of show what they can do. But yeah, I think a couple people on our message boards pointed it out too, that they counted like 65% completion or something like that. I might have, you know, not included one or two clips because there was a, because I don't know, something with the files in my computer. But
yeah,
I think it was around that threshold, that mark right there. And, you know, I think that's all you can ask for. And I think that's going to be replicative of Petrus's stat line in most games. You know, he's not going to be 15 for 20 and throw for 300 yards. He's going to be 15 for 22, 23, 16 for 22, 16 and 25, and throw for, you know, maybe 220, 230 yards.
Yeah.
I think with the run game that Iowa has this year, you can get away with that. And especially if the defense lives up to the capabilities that it has, you know, if the defensive line can take on that next step, I think that's a very solid stat line that you can work with.
Yeah.
220, 230 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions, three touchdowns. You know, you prefer no interceptions, but maybe throw one interception in there. I think that's all you can ask for at this point for this season, especially.
This is, I think, one of the more interesting talking points. I think Scott Dockman pointed this out on Twitter when Kids Day and the scrimmage was concluded. It was the first time, at least since he's been on the beat, that the offense outplayed the defense. And Kirk basically said the same thing post. He said, usually we can't gain a yard. But Sean, this is where I want to talk with you about. I think it's a good thing that the offense outplayed the defense. And like, I'm not sugarcoating anything. The defense has to be better than what they show on Saturday. But if you would rather have it one way or the other, knowing Iowa football, you want the offense to outplay the defense, in my opinion. I think that it showed off what talent Iowa has at wide receiver. The quarterback took a step forward. I still think there's some question marks, offensive tackle, like we talked about earlier. The running back depth was good. And, man, I know you were in the stands with me when we heard Phil Parker near the end of practice. He some choice words that will not be repeated on this podcast, but you talk about a guy that was laser focused on getting back to the locker room and back to the tunnel after the practice. I mean, he made a V-line right when it was over, Sean. You could tell he was heated about it. And I think when you talk about Phil Parker and the reputation that he has and what you know what you're going to get out of his defenses, I think it's going to be the best thing for this defense right now that they struggled. And I think that I'm very interested to see how they come out on week one, because that's probably the next time we're going to be able to watch them. But what do you make of the offense outplaying the defense? Again, I think it's a good thing. And I think it shows where Iowa can take a step forward. And if the defense can reach its normal level and Iowa's offense looked like it did on Saturday, they got a shot to win the West, I think, for sure.
Yeah, it was really weird to see that, because it seems like all the spring practices that we've been able to go to, the defense just absolutely dominated the offense. And, you know, you kind of go in expecting that, but that was not the case on Saturday. And I thought that was really intriguing too. And, you know, I think I talk about the defensive line and worrying about it a little bit, but I think you have to remember that Iowa didn't have Noah Shannon, didn't have Louis Steck, who I think could be a contributor this year, didn't have Logan Jones, who is hopeful to come back at the end of the year, towards the end of the year. We don't really it's kind of unclear there. And I just thought we're kind of, you know, out of, not out of sorts, but I thought the offensive line, I think you have to give props to the offensive line too for their play. And I thought the running backs were really good too. So I don't want to look too far into it, but I think it's definitely a sign of encouragement to see that. Now, I would have liked to see a little bit more in the passing game. I know that's kind of unrealistic and I might be asking for too much because, you know, you're not going to show your cards at this point in the season, especially when the media is right in front and is present.
Especially with little sassy Kirk too on Friday said, oh, if you could go to practice every day, but you can't because I'm not going to let you.
Yeah, that was another thing too. So, I mean, I was encouraged by it. I think it's definitely it's optimistic. I think you have to think optimistically about it. I know the defense, you would like to see them dominate, but, you know, they've said before that the defense has dominated the last couple of practices and throughout fall camp, and this is the first time in a while that the offense has really looked this good, and I think that's encouraging. But I also think it's not time to worry about the defense in any regard.
That's kind of where I'm at. I mean, if there's a couple of things you really don't question about Iowa football, the defense, how ready they're going to be as a whole, I think. I mean, just Phil Parker's resume. And usually the O-line play, which is very interesting considering that that's basically our two biggest questions right now coming out of the scrimmage and all that. But a couple of positions, I do want to break down at least this. I mean, the secondary, I think we kind of got what we expected. The good news is, it is worth noting that Kayvon Merriweather, who did leave the scrimmage with a collarbone or a shoulder issue, Kirk did not seem worried about it from everything I'm aware of. And this is interesting, Sean. I don't know. Did you watch the video of who's the funniest guy on the team that Iowa football released?
Yeah, I did.
Kayvon Merriweather is in uniform. I'm really wondering when they recorded that and how long it really took him to edit.
I thought someone said that in the photos that they posted that he was practicing for Monday's practice.
Yeah, and I mean, if that's the case, then that's fantastic. And like I said, Kirk basically said that, you know, he didn't seem really worried about it whatsoever. Said the initial report was good. And I mean, we saw Kayvon in front of us after he took off the pads and everything. He was stretching his arms out. I mean, he was all the way up. I mean, I'm no doubt it probably hurt and something definitely happened, but I think he's going to be all right. The secondary, I think you know what you're going to get out of him. Terry Roberts, I thought, was fantastic. His special teams play is really translating to defense. But, Sean, I think the receivers, they look sharp. I thought Tyrone did some good things. I think Keegan did some really good things. But, man, Arlen Bruce, he has to be on the field. He's got to be on the field this fall. And I think even from week one, I think what he showed on Saturday, what he showed in spring ball, he's probably one of the better. And Kellen Copeland said this too on Friday. I mean, he's not describing him as a receiver. He just said he's an all around really talented football player. And I think that's exactly what we saw on Saturday. And I think he's going to need to be on the field as well. Keegan, I think, needs to be on the field with what he showed. The one guy who I really am still kind of waiting for that big practice, that big moment. I mean, to be fair, I don't think we saw him in spring, Sean, but Nico Reganey just didn't really seem to do that much on Saturday. And I mean, there's only limited reps. The ball can only get around so much, but I really don't remember a big play from Nico on Saturday, unless I'm completely in the wrong here.
Yeah, I went through most of the clips and I didn't see him either. I don't know how many snaps exactly he was out there for. I'm not too worried about Nico when it comes to that. I thought the defense did a pretty good job on him. I thought the defense did a fine job limiting Tyrone outside of a couple receptions too. Yeah. And Charlie Jones, I don't remember seeing a whole ton of Charlie Jones. But, you know, I think that's kind of on purpose too, given that Iowa's play calls and, you know, not wanting to show too much. I know we saw Sam Laporta a couple times. I believe Luke Lachey came down with the reception. I know that Josiah Meeman had a couple as well, which was really encouraging. But yeah, I don't want to, you know, overanalyze the wide receivers too much after that one practice. I kind of feel like that was on purpose a little bit that they did that. But I mean, I could see where the concern is a little bit with, you know, Nico and having that big practice wasn't out there for the spring. We'll see what happens with him. I think he can be, you know, I think he can have a similar impact to as Nick Easley had a couple of years ago, being that reliable slot guy. And I think Deontay Vines is going to come into that role eventually as well, which was good to see him score that touchdown, quote unquote touchdown, in the practice. But yeah, I'm not too worried about the wide receivers yet. I feel like that'll figure itself out.
And Nico's got the experience to rely on too. And I think this is, from my standpoint, Sean, I think they're farther along. The wide receiver room as a whole is farther along than what I remember seeing of any scrimmage. Like, as a group, they are better right now than they've been. So I think that is encouraging for sure. And I'm eager to see sort of how that's going to carry over into Saturday and how Arlen Bruce and Keegan Johnson them are going to really kind of live in the moment, because they can make all these plays and standout practices, but until there's 70,000 fans watching your every move and a national televised audience, you know, that'll be the next test for them. And quite honestly, Sean, that's going to be a test for Spencer Petras, because he's never played significant snaps in a crowd setting. So that'll be something to watch as well. But no, I'm encouraged, I think, about this Iowa team from what I saw. I do want to see Sam Laporta continuing to take that next step forward. Media Day, again, I thought was really good to be able to talk to a lot of those guys. Torrey Taylor, still Torrey Taylor. And something else we haven't really talked about, Sean, but Caleb Shudak, I thought was pretty solid from a kicking perspective. I think he missed one 52-yarder on the left, to the left, but he was hitting a 50-yard field goal. He was doing all this other stuff. I thought he looked all right as well. So I think there's some good things to take away. I think there's some definite question marks, but I do feel all right about the offense. I really do. As opposed to years past, I think the biggest thing for me is, how is the O-line going to hold up, and can Spencer Petras carry that same command knowing that he's going to get hit? Because I think that's a big deal as well. I think it's easier to be comfortable in the pocket and to do all these other things when you have a no contact jersey on and nobody's going to come, you know, 290 pounds is not going to come flying at you running 15 miles an hour. So I'm eager to see that. We got a bunch of questions in our mailbag, Sean, but really quick, I do just want to mention this as well. We have a 2-day sale going on. Get 75% off an annual subscription fall camp special, HawkeyeInsider.com, all the latest Iowa news, analysis, scoop, and everything else. And I think we got some, I don't think I'm underselling it when I say we got some big plans this fall and what we're going to do to continue to expand our coverage. A lot of really, really big things are coming to 24/7 Sports. And I'm absolutely ecstatic about it. And I'm really just excited to see where the future of our coverage is going to go. Come along for the ride, 75% off, HawkeyeInsider.com. Go to HawkeyeInsider.com for the details, or at David Eichel or at SBach247. Sean, before we get into our mailbag, I do want to have a couple of house cleaning notes about some Iowa basketball news. Luca Garza doing what he, at least what I expected him to do, but getting a two-way contract with the Detroit Pistons as of yesterday. Very, very big news. He's been every single game, Sean, he's gotten better in the summer. Like, he had 9-4, I think, the first game. And then I think he had 12-7, I want to say. Then he had three straight double-doubles. And last night went for 21 points, 15 rebounds, shortly after signing that two-way contract. So it is kind of funny to me. I think a lot of Pistons fans were excited about picking Luka, but it was a very much sort of hit or miss. You know, they're like either really ecstatic or like not really. There was no like middle line. But then after he got the two-way deal, everybody is, at least from what I read, was pretty angry he didn't get a guaranteed contract for the season. But I mean, Sean, what was your kind of takeaway? I mean, I'm not surprised Luka's doing what Luka's doing, quite honestly.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just typing some. I think Luka, you know, I want to, when it comes to Summer League, I want to take everything with a grain of salt. especially given that, you know, 15, maybe 10 to 15%, maybe 20, but more 10 to 15, I think, are actually going to be on an NBA roster.
Yeah.
That's like, am I wrong in saying that or no?
I would hover closer to 20 because usually most of the first round picks are guaranteed roster spots, but right. Then you also have like the second, like, I don't want to say unproven second year, third year guys, but they're there as well. And they're probably going to be on there, but they wanted to get extra run in the summer.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. But I think he can, if he gets the right team, I think he can stick. My question is, you know, is he going to find that right team? You know, I had an interesting talk yesterday with a few people being like, you know, are teams going to be willing to stick with Garza given like knowing his limitations on the court? And I thought it was interesting because he did look a little more nimble on the floor. I know he's still kind of a little slow, but, and I think too, that clip of him getting his shot blocked a couple of times was a little, you know, the big concern coming into this. But, you know, if he finds the right spot, I think he can stick. But if he doesn't, I'm curious to see if he could have a career similar to Tyler Cook where he's kind of bouncing around. But I think he'll be more stable than Cook.
Yeah.
But I'm just very – I don't know. I'm still – I want to be optimistic about it, but I'm just not ready to be that yet.
The thing that surprised me, Sean, is he's rebounding the ball better than I thought he would. And that's nothing to do with his relentlessness or anything like that, but obviously the athletic. I mean, there's just pure athletes in the NBA. But, I mean, he had, I think, 15 and 10 at half last night in 13 minutes. I mean, he's rebounding the ball better, and I think that – his shot blocking, he's even shown a little bit of that. I mean, he blocked a guy going for a reverse dunk at the rim. I mean, I can't remember the last time we saw Luka do that. I think he's shooting 43% from three, but shooting well from the free throw line until I think last night. But he's done some really good things. I'm interested to see what happens. And by the way, for people who don't know what a two-way contract is, teams are permitted to have two players on a two-way contract at any given time throughout the season, in addition to a 15 normal man regular season roster. Players under a two-way contract will be permitted to be on NBA teams' active list for no more than 50 games during the regular season. No limit on practices, workouts, or activities with that team. But the big key is there's only players with three or fewer years of NBA experience are able to sign two-way contracts, which can either be for one or two seasons. And Garza can work his way into a guaranteed contract from a two-way contract during the regular season. So we'll see what happens. I think he can be a dominant player in the G League for sure, but I do think he's going to get some run with the Pistons. And if he plays well against the NBA's top talent, I think he can find a way to stick on the roster. Scott Dockman from The Athletic reported last night that Joe Wieskamp will also be signing a two-way deal with San Antonio Spurs. I thought Wieskamp, Sean, had a shot at a guaranteed contract, but I think right now he's not shooting the ball well enough from deep. But I did see some encouraging things. I think he was rebounding the ball very well. And something I think he didn't do in college, he started to show last year in college. He was going to the rim when his three-point shot wasn't falling. And he was finishing well around the rim, pulling up off screens for mid-range jumpers and converting them. I think he will get a guaranteed contract sometime throughout the year. But it doesn't surprise me just based on the way he's shooting the three ball right now that it sounds like it's going to be a two-way deal. This is not officially done, but Scott Dockerman from The Athletic did report that. So I'm eager to see what happens. I think his game translates the NBA and Pop's system very well, but at the end of the day, he's got to be able to shoot the ball consistently, which I think he'll be able to recover from. And before we get into our mailbag, one quick final note. Iowa's Caitlin Clark, three-time gold medalist at 19 years old, Sean. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. MVP for the FIBA World Cup. Dominant performance from the United States. And Caitlin continues to, I think, sort of ascend in worldwide popularity just as far as being one of the more marketable women's basketball players in the country. And no better time, I think, for her to really set off her name, image, and likeness than releasing some limited edition stuff, which she said will be coming here soon. So I'm interested to see how that sort of sells. And I think that will be a big thing in Iowa, Sean. I think she's going to be one of the more more profitable athletes at Iowa, and she's got three more years to do that as well. So congratulations to Caitlin. But Sean, now let's dive into our mailbag. I think we got plenty of questions from people. We talked about this a little bit, but let's go back into it. Will the defensive line be the weak link for Iowa's success this year? Where are you kind of taking on that? Do you think that's the X factor going into the season? Is that going to be the weak link? And how much better do you think they need to get to win the West?
Defensively, I think maybe, especially because you have to realize, like, they're pretty thin when it comes to experience. And I think that could be critical at some moments, especially in the first couple games of the season. I think to start the year, it'll be kind of could be the weak link, but I think it could get better as the year goes on. I mean, I'm not going on a limb there, but I think it'll be better.
I do too. I mean, in-game reps solve everything. You know, Sean, I'll say this. I think they'll take a dramatic jump from week two to week three. After going up against Indiana, after going against Iowa State, then coming back against maybe a Kent State and Colorado State, I think before Iowa really gets into the nitty-gritty Big Ten season, I think they'll be able to see a big jump in play. But as far as the keys for the defense, yeah, I do. I think that's the key for Iowa's success, because even the best secondaries in the country, Sean, can only guard for so long, can only defend wide receivers for so long. You can't allow a quarterback to sit in the pocket, especially when you think about all the talented quarterbacks that the Big Ten has. And when you're going up against, you know, again, Kent State had an explosive passing offense last year. Brock Purdy, they returned everybody for Iowa State. Indiana, Michael Penix is going to be back. I mean, they got Ty Freifogel's back again, isn't he?
Yeah, Ty Freifogel's back. Wap Filer's gone.
I mean, they got some dudes. Like, Iowa's going to have to get pressure on these quarterbacks. Again, even the best secondaries and linebacking corps can only do so much for so long. So I'm not worried about Iowa's linebackers. I'm certainly not worried about the secondary at all. I think defensive line is going to be the big thing. Sean, I don't know how much you know about this yet, because we are so caught up in football, obviously, for Friday, Saturday, and most of Sunday. But what do you know, if anything, about the new 2022 offer? Iowa, it seems like Iowa staff's gone back and forth on whether or not to take a big man, but you know, he doesn't strike me as a pure center. He probably strikes me as more of a four. But what's kind of your initial take on Iowa's latest 2022 offer?
Yeah, it's been pretty quiet on that front. I mean, I'm trying my best to get info there, but it's been relatively quiet. And, yeah, he's a high upside guy, really took off. Dominic Barlow out of New Jersey is who we're referring to. Really took off this offseason, especially on the AAU circuit with the New York Rens. Same high school or same AAU team as former Iowa top target Kyle Filipowski. So the Iowa staff really saw Barlow a lot throughout the year and throughout the summer and spring, and was keeping a close eye on him. And, you know, it led to an offer. Right now, I've heard that Pitt is the main one to watch here. He took an official visit down there in June, and that's the only official visit he has locked in so far. Couldn't really give you a great feel if he plans to take an official visit to Iowa this year. He's got a lot of offers that have come in. I think Iowa's got a decent shot at getting him on campus for an official visit. We'll see. I think it's encouraging that they entered the race, but I'm not fully certain at this point. Sure. I'll have a better idea on that in the next couple of weeks. But, yeah, I mean, when it comes to basketball offers, I think we could see a couple more of them. I'm not guaranteeing that. I think Iowa, of the three official visitors that we've confirmed this year so far, or this fall so far, I think they got a really good shot at least one of them being Josh Dix. And I think they're right there for Tyler Nickel and Jackson Kohler, two four-star forwards, top 100 guys who could play different positions. Mm-hmm. So it's gonna be really encouraging. I mean, a lot of programs aren't, you know, you're not getting the typical teams recruiting these top 100 guys because, you know, they're looking in the transfer portal or, you know, they have spots that, you know, they already have filled up. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I think Iowa's got a shot at two at landing, you know, potentially two top 100 guys in this class, already having one in DeSante Bowen, four-star point guard, commit out of Worcester Academy in New Hampshire, committed back in June to Iowa, have a good shot at Josh Dick, so I think could potentially be a top 150 guy, maybe yep. top 175. And then, you know, Jackson Bart or Jackson Kohler and Tyler Nickel, I think Iowa is right there for both of those guys. So the fall is going to be really fascinating. I think Iowa has a really good chance of getting their best class in the Fran McCaffrey era, at least. I think it's really good shot of having that happen.
I think Tyler Nickel, if I, you know, for Iowa's wish list, I think Tyler Nickel would be near the top, at least in my eyes, because I think he's a dynamic scorer. I think he'd fit really, really well offensively with Fran's system. And he strikes me as a guy who, again, straight bucket. I think he'd fit in really well with Iowa's offense. But like you said, I think getting Kohler would be a big boost as well. Let's see. Were there any sacks or hurries caused by the defensive line at Kids Day? Yeah, there were plenty, I think, but you only can take them with a grain of salt, I think, Sean, because who knows if they actually would have been able, you know, if they could hit the quarterback, if they could, you know, get guys out of the backfield. Like it's almost kind of awkward to watch because you could see Deontay Craig running full speed or Van Valkenburg running full speed, then slowing up and just tapping him on the shoulder or something like that. But who knows if Spencer would have been able to, you know, navigate his way out of it, escape the pocket, make a throw. Who knows if he would have fumbled? Like, there's really no way. It just depends on the person how many sacks or hurries you really want to give. I mean, I think without a doubt, the top two for me were Van Valkenburg and Evans, and I think Deontay Craig had a handful as well. But Evans off the edge, I was pretty surprised with.
Impressed with. Yeah, he's fast. He's twitchy. He's got a lot of he's going to be good. I think he could be a breakout guy. That's what Zach Van Valkenburg told me at Big Ten Media Days, and I think I'm going to take his word for it.
Were there any new injuries after the Kids' Day scrimmage? No. I mean, just Kayvon Merriweather, but like Sean and I talked about earlier, I think Kayvon's going to be good to go, which is a very, very good thing because I really like Kayvon's upside. If he can just continue to stay healthy and get in-game reps, I mean, he freak athlete, a heavy hitter, and I think he understands the defense. I think he complements Jack Kerner's skill set pretty well there. Is Mason Richmond currently the first team left tackle? If so, where do you see Plum? Does he move to right tackle? Again, I think Sean and I hit on that earlier. I think it's still an open battle for who's going to take that spot, Plum or Richmond. And at this point, unless something changes over the course of camp, Nick DeJong is going to be the starting right tackle. And I think that was solidified with what we saw on Saturday for the most part. Any chance the NCAA will adopt an injury report similar to the NFL in today's marketplace? It only makes sense. That's a very interesting thing. I think that's going to just depend on the conference, but I can tell you that Kirk would not be a fan of it. Jim Harbaugh certainly would not be a fan of it. And I think it would get heavy pushback from a lot of the coaches, Sean. But when you talk about, you know, legalized sports gambling, especially in Iowa, and I think it's legal now in Michigan as well, I mean, these are good things that people are going to need to know. I think there's a slight chance, but I'm curious what sort of jurisdiction the NCAA would have over that. I think it's going to break down just depending on the conference. In short, it's the answer, and I think the coaches are going to be heavily against that. So we'll see. I don't think it's a bad idea, though. Any more recruiting predictions post-September visits? Sean, I don't think you have any current crystal ball predictions out. I could be wrong about that. Do you even want to go down that rabbit hole quite yet? You kind of did earlier.
Yeah, I did for basketball. I think if I had to predict right now for football, I would say that Xavier Nwankwo goes to Notre Dame. That would be my prediction right now. I think Iowa's still in the race. I think that's really encouraging to see that they're getting a game day visit and an official visit. I just think I'm going to give the edge to the Irish right now based on what I've been told. Brian Allen Jr., that could go either way, but I think the relationship with Jason Manson is going to be critical. I think that's why I could give Iowa a little bit of an edge. But in terms of 2022, it's going to be really interesting to see what, for football, what new offers come about this fall, because I know the staff wants to get some senior film, wants to see film with guys that, you know, didn't have a full junior year and all that. And I think there could be, or I know there will be more offers come about, and I think there'll be some commits as well in the next few months outside of ones that we're expecting here soon. So keep an eye out for that. It should be an interesting fall. I don't think there'll be any 2023 commits this fall, maybe one or two, but I don't think I could see it yet.
Probably not till springtime. Because, I mean, we're going to see a bunch of new offers go out with the normalized high school football. Yeah.
Yes.
Predict your starting five for Iowa basketball this winter, I should say. I think it's a no-brainer in my book. I really don't know how it goes any other way than this as of right now. I got Joe Toussaint starting at the point guard. I got Jordan Bohannon at the two. A little bit of worry there for me, though, just because I think that's not ideal size for a one and two guard. I have Patrick McCaffrey at the three. I have Keegan at the four. And I have Philip Rabracha at the five. I think Connor's going to be the sixth man coming off the bench.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was talking to someone about this yesterday, and I think you could obviously interchange Patrick or Keegan at the three and four, which is really good. And I think you have it set with, you know, Joe and Jordan at one and two. And then Rabracha as well. What have you heard about Rabracha lately and how he's kind of adjusted to the program?
You know, I think he's been good. I think he fits really well with the offense. The guys really like him a lot. He's been putting in a lot of extra work. I've heard good things about the way he's shooting the ball, which if he can be a stretch five, Sean, I think that's a really, really big deal. I still think there's some worry. I don't want to say from those within the program, but on the outside looking in, I still think there's some worry about how he's going to be able to go up against huge Big Ten caliber fives. I think we see what EJ Liddell can do, but Liddell's also a different breed of an athlete. We see what Trace Jackson Davis can do, but he's also, again, a different breed of an athlete. But then you have Kofi Coburn. I mean, I think Iowa's best defense against him is going to be throwing in Joshua Ogundole, because he's the only one that can match up size-wise. We saw at least a couple strings of last year what we saw against him. I think Phillip's going to do well in the system. I think he's easily a 14-7 guy, 14-6.5 guy. But I do think the offense primarily going to be around Keegan, number one. I think it should be when you have a first-round pick who could potentially work his way up into a lottery pick if he shoots the ball well enough from deep. So, again, it's going to be very interesting. I think Fran could go a lot of different ways, because I think Riley Mulvey might have to get minutes this year. Josh Ogundole might have to get minutes. But then you look at, could we see lineups of, you know, Jordan Bohannon moving the one, Sean? Then you have Chris Murray, Keegan Murray, Patrick McCaffrey, and Philip Rabracha. Or maybe throw Tony Perkins in and then have a small lineup of Patrick, Keegan, Chris, Tony, and Joe. I mean, there's a lot of different ways about this, and I really don't think we're going to get any solidified answers until games start rolling around. So, again, I think Phillip's going to be fine, and he's got the experience, and I think he's got the leadership. If he can become a better rim protector, that's going to be the key for Iowa's. Can he really shut down? You know, not shut down, but even if he's like an Adam Woodbury in terms of he's not going to record a lot of blocks, but he just alters shots, I think that's what they're hoping to sort of get out of him. A couple more questions here before we wrap this up. I may have missed this somewhere else, but Tyler Barnes says something like, we'd hear good news on a couple of recruits over the next 2 weeks. Is he referring to Sean Patterson and Brian Allen Jr.? I mean, Sean, it's pretty yes, but it's also worth noting that Illinois coach Brett Bielema also alluded to hearing some good news, which could be about Brian Allen as well, correct?
I think Bielema said there's a recruit making a decision soon.
Okay. Okay.
I think that's what I heard.
Okay. But yeah, Patterson's the other. He's set to announce tonight at, I believe, 6 p.m. Central, along with some of his teammates at other local restaurants. So we'll see what happens there. Stay tuned to Hawkeye Insider for that. We talked about defensive line. Who has been the standout performers at camp thus far, according to some people in the know? I can give a couple on offense and you can flip around defense. I heard Justin Jacobs is taking his game to a different level. I think he's going to be a guy that if, when Iowa runs a 4-3, I'm very interested to see Sean if they try to work in some Raider package with him. I think he'd be a really, really effective weapon there. If he can just be a better in pass coverage, I think that's going to be the biggest key for him. I've heard Justin's played really well. I've also been a big fan of, I think Riley Moss is continuing to really, really establish himself as a really, I'll say, underappreciated corner, Sean. I mean, he's been a pretty consistent performer, I think, throughout his Iowa career. Obviously, a lot of his interceptions have come against Minnesota. I think 4 of his 6 career interceptions are against Minnesota. But he's done some really nice things. I've heard he's done really well. I mean, Arlen Bruce, I think you can make a case that Arlen Bruce has been the most impressive freshman wide receiver. I think Keegan's, I want to say, more likely to play because I think they're both, I think they're both going to play based on everything that we've seen. So I'll give the two freshmen the nod. Tyler Goodson's what you're getting, expecting out of Tyler Goodson. Spencer Petras has been up and down. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Sean, but Kirk said that it was his best performance of camp was on Saturday during the scrimmage, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So those are a couple guys I've seen. And I've also heard Kayvon Merriweather is close to taking that next step. And if he can take that next step during the season, I think that's going to be a very, very big boost, especially when you pair him with Jack Kerner in those safety spots.
Yeah, you hit on most of the ones I was going to talk about. I know Kirk mentioned LeSean Williams the other day, and we saw that we saw the next day what he could do. So that was really encouraging to see. You know, you mentioned Justin Jacobs. That was the guy I was going to talk about. Jack Campbell has done a good job setting the tone at that linebacker spot. Clearly the top guy along with Seth Benson. Will be interesting to see how they kind of work about those three. Seth Wallace mentioned to me that they're going to move those guys around a little bit throughout practice, kind of get them locked down on different spots, which would be really good for all of them. And, you know, you've hit on those guys. I mean, Connor Colby's been good.
Yep.
We've mentioned that. Ivory Kelly Martin's been really impressive with how he's been able to fight back. I think Tyrone Tracy is going to be another guy, too, that I think is capable of, you know, making the leap as well. But you mentioned Arlen Bruce and Keegan Johnson. I think I have a hard time seeing Iowa keeping those guys off the field this year, too.
I also want to throw in Deonte Craig in that category of guys that have been really good. And the thing that was surprising me a little bit, Sean, but nothing like outworldly, Deonte Craig working a little bit inside. And I think that's Kelvin Bell's way of saying, hey, look, you're going to learn every position. We're putting our best 4 guys out there. And that's exactly what they're going to do. So I think those are a couple guys you're really going to want to keep an eye on. I'm trying to think if there's any premier backup, Sean, that we've missed. I mean, Josiah Meehman. I mean, I don't know how consistent he's been through camp, but he was surprising to me a little bit, I think. At least on Saturday, he had a one-handed grab, which is fantastic. But I think those are some of the standout guys that at least I've heard through the grapevine. I think what we saw on Saturday. And Sean, this is our last question before we wrap this up. What would have caused more overreaction from the fans? The offense looking better last Saturday or the defense?
I would say the offense.
Yeah.
Because I feel like people are going to know what you're going to get with the Iowa defense more often than not. But the offense was really spectacular compared to what has been the buzz previously.
I think so too. But I also, I also think back, Sean, to how many times like we've watched these scrimmages and they've scored like 3 touchdowns the entire day. And everybody's just, oh, another year of, you know, mediocre, you know, whatever, right? Mediocre offense. What's going to happen? I'm going to go with what you said though, too. I think the offense, because now, at least now, I think there's some sort of confidence level, but I also think there's a higher expectation of what this offense can do. But again, it's what we've limited to one practice, and it's hard for us. It's almost an impossible task for us, Sean, to watch one practice, articulate our thoughts about it and who stands out. And then people wonder why they don't look the same come week 1 or week 2. And it's because, well, we watch one practice. Like, we can talk to people between the grapevines and all that. But what matters is the product on the field. So it's a tough task, but it is what it is. But we'll have another one of these here next week. We'll see if there's some recruiting news we can talk about. Plenty of stuff as we continue to count down for an Iowa Hawkeye football season that it's going to be very interesting. And I think, Sean, when we do this next week, I'm also going to do my column next week about this, and we'll record the podcast either before or after I decide to do it. I'm not sure yet. Let's get our final prediction for the season, go week by week, and do a full schedule analysis. And HawkeyeInsider.com, again, 75% off an annual subscription. Get the latest news, scoop, analysis, and everything you want out of your Iowa Hawkeye coverage, $224 a month. No better deal in the market. So Hawkeye Insider, David Eichel, Sean Bock, be sure to follow us at David Eichel on Twitter, at SBock247, at Hawkeyes on 247. And we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening.
Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.